ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम फर्स्ट कैंटो चैप्टर 15 टेक्स्ट 42। त्रिद्वे
उद्वा
च
पञ्चत्वे जिहं
मुनि
सर्वान्
आत्मनि
अजुहावि
ब्राह्मणि
आत्मानं
अव्याये। This no. Thus annihilating the gross body of five elements into the three qualitative modes of material nature, he merged them in one nations, and then absorbed that nations in the self, Brahman, which is inexhaustible in all circumstances. Purport, Srila Prabhupada. All that is manifest in the material world is the product of the Mahatattva Avyakta. And things that are visible in our material vision are nothing but combinations and permutations of such varied material products. But the living energy is different from such material products. It is due to the living energy's forgetfulness of his eternal nature as eternal servitor of the Lord, and his false conception of becoming a so-called Lord of the material nature, that he is obliged to enter into the existence of false sense enjoyment. Thus, a concomitant generation of material energies is the principal cause of the minds being materially affected. Thus, the gross body of five elements is produced. Maharaj Yudhishthira reversed the action and merged the five elements of the body in the three modes of material nature. The qualitative distinction of the body as being good, bad, or mediocre is extinguished, and again the qualitative manifestations become merged in the material energy, which is produced from a false sense of the pure living energy. When one is thus inclined to become an associate of the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, and one of the innumerable planets of the spiritual sky, especially in Goloka Vrindavan, one has to think always that he is different from the material energy. He has nothing to do with it, and he has to realize himself as the spirit soul, Brahman, qualitatively equal with the supreme Brahman, Parameshvara. Maharaj Yudhishthira, after distributing his kingdom to Parikshit and Vajra, did not think himself emperor of the world or head of the Kuru dynasty. This sense of freedom from material relations, as well as freedom from the material engagement of the gross and subtle encirclement, makes one free to act as the servitor of the Lord, even though one is in the material world. This stage is called Jivan Mukta stage, or the liberated stage, even in the material world. That is a process of ending material existence. One must not think that he is Brahman, but must act like Brahman. One who only thinks himself Brahman is an impersonalist, and one who acts like Brahman is the pure devotee. Tritve hutva cha panchatvam tach chaikatve juhun muni sarvam atmani ajuhavit brahmani atmanam avyaye. Thus, annihilating the gross body of five elements into the three qualitative modes of material nature, he merged them in one nations, and then absorbed that nations in the self, Brahman, which is inexhaustible in all circumstances. So again we hear how Yudhishthira Maharaj achieved perfection, or better to say, how he reversed the process of creation, like we hear from the Bhagavatam, how during the process of creation, from the most subtle, the grosser and grosser and grosser elements are generated. Just like we heard before, that the mind is the cause of our bondage in the material world. And the mind also, like Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, can also be the cause, or the main instrument, of freeing us from the material entanglement. That means, in other words, that our activities and our existence in the material world actually is kind of generated from the subtle plane. Just like Prabhupada said once, that the gross material body is the complete manifestation of our consciousness. You get a body according to your consciousness. And when the consciousness becomes purified, one becomes, like Prabhupada mentions here, one becomes jivanmukt. One becomes more and more liberated. And even though one might be still living within the material environment, by fixing himself firmly on the spiritual platform, or better to say, in devotional service, absorbing oneself in devotional service, one achieves perfection, liberation, even being within the material environment. Srila Prabhupada mentions this jivan mukta. This comes from this word, jivan mukta chamuchate. Ihayasya haridasya kalmanam sahira. This verse from the by Srila Rupa Goswami says that when one becomes completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness by by using one's body, mind and words exclusively in the service of Krishna, one is not touched anymore by the modes of nature. So Prabhupada also used to explain this, what actually keeps us going in the material world is our so-called parapta karma. Parapta karma. This is the karma that is just kind of swinging out. Just like when you have one of these ventilators. Ventilators? Mm-hmm. Like in the hot countries, they always have on the ceiling these ventilators. When you pull up the plug, the thing is still moving, or maybe even moving very fast, but because it's not connected to the power anymore, it doesn't receive any new impulses. It's just swinging out, getting slower and slower and slower and slower, until finally it comes to an end. And that means, in relationship to our karma, the parapta karma, we also swinging out. Our karma is just like, we're not creating any new karma, provided that we don't. We should be very careful that once we put out the plug, what does it mean to put out the plug? Put out the plug means that one becomes initiated. Through the process of initiation, all the karma comes to an end. Krishna very mercifully absorbs through the chain of the civil succession all our karma, and what remains is just the parapta karma, just like this body is a manifestation of karma, and it has its natural development, just like we become old and the body becomes miserable and all the different functions of the body become slower and slower and less powerful. We have to use glasses, we have to hear by putting some machine in our ears. We have to, in order to digest properly, we have to take all kinds of pills and medicines. And we have problems with the spine. We can't just lay down anywhere anymore like before, but we have to have some special arrangement, a special pillar and this and that. And we have to follow a diet and all that. That's all part. this parapta karma. Also, you know, it's not that when you become a devotee that your body changes all of a sudden. That you become blonde or you become black or you become you become long or small. Or maybe it's fat, yeah. That's pretty normal, no? No? But normally, what happens actually, and that's sometimes difficult for people to understand, who have don't understand the science, spiritual science very well, is that actually what happens is that our existence becomes spiritualized, more and more spiritualized. Starting with our consciousness, our mind, our intelligence, we become more and more spiritualized. That means our material energy that we are, the body is composed of, becomes more and more spiritualized, energized by spiritual energy, turns. And that's why also, for example, when a great soul leaves the body, like a big acharya, spiritual master, like Prabhupada, or our previous acharyas, I also Haridas Thakur, I remember from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's also very nicely described how he left his body, and how his body was worshipped by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. When Haridas Thakur died, or gave up his body, he did it in the presence of Lord Chaitanya, looking at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu while he was giving up the body. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so pleased by the way that Haridas Thakur had acted, and that he gave up his body, fully Krishna conscious, that he picked up the body and he started dancing with the body in ecstasy. Then they made a whole procession. And then they buried the body. Normally bodies are not buried in Vedic culture. Bodies are burned because they're considered very impure. So that's why they burn them. And they don't have any problems with space on the cemetery or something like that. But rather they take the ashes and they make a very nice ceremony and they carry them to the Ganges or some sacred river. And that's part of the Vedic procedure. But when some great soul gives up the body, it's a different, completely different procedure. Because his body is considered sacred. Why? Because it has become completely spiritualized by the devotion, dedication, devotional service. It has always been in touch with devotional service and with Krishna and its pure devotional service. That's why those bodies, they actually become sacred, sanctified, and they become worshipable. And some samadhis, so-called samadhis, some structure, some buildings are constructed around their body or upon their body, just like the samadhi in Vrindavan of Srila Prabhupada, where Srila Prabhupada was, where his remnants are, within years. There was a whole ceremony of covering Srila Prabhupada's body with salt and then with earth, and so many mantras and prayers were chanted. And above it all, the samadhi was constructed, very beautiful construction, with a huge Prabhupada murti that is worshipped very nicely. Actually, this Prabhupada murti, I remember there was a lot of discussion in the GBC years ago, how to maintain the worship of the deity Prabhupada. And every GBC man was promising. That he would send regularly devotees from his zone to worship the Prabhupada Murti. So the whole year, I don't know, 1 or 2 years were planned ahead for this worship. And all the GBC, obliged him, took the vote of sending devotees to worship Srila Prabhupada. So why is all this? Why is this so important? Because these places where the remnants of pure devotees are kept actually become sacred places. They become places of pilgrimage. Due to the potency of the pure devotional service. Not somebody who has dedicated his life or, you know, to all his energy and serving the Supreme Person of Godhead, he becomes a great soul. A Mahatma, just like Prabhupada mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, a person who has taken complete shelter at the greatest soul, the biggest soul, Krishna. More one becomes a servant, or one takes shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna, the more one becomes great, Mahatma, great soul. And the more one wants to enjoy the material world, the more one wants to make himself big independently, the more insignificant he becomes. He becomes less and less and less. You know, just like we know from the Bhagavad Gita, you know, the material world, by the misuse of our independence, we become more and more and more covered by the modes of nature. That means the original, pure, living entity or consciousness becomes more and more covered over, until it becomes so covered over that hardly any consciousness is perceived in it. Just like in the lower forms, like we always hear that there are 8,400,000 different spaces of life, and that these spaces have been divided into two main divisions, the movable and the unmovable, movable and immovable forms. And without doubt, those who are immovable are in a much less fortunate position, a very unfortunate position, like the trees, plants, and even the mountains. So they also describe in the shastras as living entities, but their consciousness is so covered over that there's no more, hardly any symptoms of life. There's no perception of symptoms of life almost. This is our problem. The more we become independent of Krishna, the more we fall under the control of the material energy. The more we surrender to Krishna, the more we are protected, or we fall under the control of the internal energy of Krishna. And in that state, we are achieving liberation. And Prabhupada says something very nicely, by speaking about not defining the difference between impersonalists and personalists. He says here that the impersonalists, they simply achieve liberation in the sense that they identify with the Brahman, not as body, but as spiritual, transcendental to the body. And that's the ultimate conclusion of the impersonalists. Whereas Prabhupada says here, the personalists or the Vaishnavas, then don't stop at that point, but they actually start acting on the platform of Brahman. And unless one starts acting on that platform, like it says in the Bhagavatam, it's just a question of time, then one again falls down because of the lack of activities and the lack of variety. Variety, like Prabhupada used to say, mother of enjoyment. Unless there's variety, there's no enjoyment. And when there's no enjoyment, there's no bliss. Sooner or later, we turn again to material bliss, material enjoyment. Coming back to the verse, just like we say in the beginning. In the beginning, everything starts from the more subtle platform. Just like it says also, I remember the Bible also says that in the beginning was the Word. And that's also confirmed in the Bhagavatam. Everything started from sound vibration. Sound vibration was created. Not ordinary sound vibration, but spiritual sound vibration. It's very, very powerful. And this original sound vibration came from Krishna. By the sound vibration coming from Krishna, everything is expanding, everything is manifesting from the more subtle to the gross platform. So now we hear here how Yudhishthira Maharaj reversed the process. How he merged all the gross into the more subtle, more subtle, more subtle, more subtle. This is a kind of technique that is mentioned in several places here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That the yogis practice. They merge themselves more and more into the inner chambers of their personality. And it was a nice example that is used to illustrate that the yogis, not just like in the Bhagavad Gita, it says the yogis they do all kinds of practices first, sadhana, asanas and this and that, and also breath control. And this is actually first only meant to control the senses and especially to fix the mind. And then they start meditating, fixing the mind more and more and more subtly. Just like when you have an onion and you take all the peels of the onion, one after the other, so many peels. And this process of what is mentioned here also, this neti-neti, or the process of analyzing oneself, is also like taking off the peels, all the different coverings of false identification. Like the most gross ones are like, I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, I'm not the intelligence, I'm not the false ego and all that, but I'm pure spirit. So this is the process. And this can, like Prabhupada mentioned in the purport here, for devotee, this is just, all unnecessary, actually. Of course, there has to be some analytical study. That's why we read so many books. The intelligence has to become purified and has to be used also, to understand things analytically very nicely. But the main process, is devotion, devotional service. Unless we actually purify our existence, purify our senses, our mind, intelligence, we will not really progress, and everything will be just maintained. This will just be an operation on the mental plane, on the speculation plane. It will just all remain theoretical. Just like Prabhupada used to use this expression, armchair speculator. Like a typical speculative philosopher of the mundane world, sitting in his armchair, with his pipe and a big book, and speculating, and smoke is coming out. In this way, he will not be able to penetrate the different coverings of illusion. We can only cut this illusion by the mercy of Krishna if we surrender, if we purify our existence by surrendering more and more and more, more and more unconditional, just like in the end Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, just give up everything. Give up everything, just surrender to. Even your religious principles that you attach to for your own, purification. Give everything up, just surrender to me. And I protect you from all sinfulness. Of course, this is very elevated, but we have to know what the goal is. We have to, just like when it says that proper use of intelligence is that one first of analyzes, understands what's the goal, and then one points into this goal by making plans or systematically going towards the goal. So that's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. When he gives us in the 18th chapter this goal, Prabhupada used to say that when we hear about these things, we should become encouraged, we should become inspired, we should become enthusiastic. And we shouldn't become discouraged. Ooh, I never make it. No! That's why Krishna says in the end, Nasucha! No fear. Don't have fear. Don't become discouraged. My dear Arjuna, don't become discouraged. And by this, how you say, Amudigam, how you say Amudigam? By this encouragement, Arjuna felt very inspired. He got up and did what he did. So we should also become inspired, enthusiastic when we hear these great souls of Krishna. What the goal is, what the higher realms are that we want to go to, or at least pure devotional service that is most pleasing to Krishna. We should desire to be also become pure devotees. Because once you become a pure devotee, you become very, very, putty, nutsly. In English, how do you say? Putty.
Useful,
right? So much language. Useful. No? We become useful. The more we are thinking of ourselves, the less we are useful in devotional service. Just like we see the devotees who are successful in the devotional service. It's not because of some material qualification or some good luck or something like that. But it's actually because they have surrendered. This is sometimes very difficult for people to understand who are not devotees. Because they see position differently. They don't understand that when somebody becomes an important devotee, it's because of Krishna. Because Krishna is always trying to glorify his devotees. Just like Krishna, like devotees are always trying to glorify Krishna and making Krishna great, in the same way Krishna is always trying also to make his devotees famous and successful. And he helps them. That's why we just read the other day, it wasn't here, it was somewhere else, one temple that we were reading about. It was in Nuremberg. We were reading about King Riga, mentioned in the Krishna book. And this story is especially meant to illustrate the danger of taking things from a Brahmin. This Riga, he gave so many thousands and thousands of cows every day to the Brahmin. He was so wealthy, so powerful. But he committed a little mistake. There was one cow that left the herd that he had given to a Brahmana, and that cow came back. And so, by mistake, unconsciously, he gave that same cow to another Brahmana. And because the Brahmanas are very conscious, the Brahmana immediately detected this mistake. The two Brahmanas found this out. One said, "This is my cow. This cow was given to me in charity." And the other said, no, this is my cow. I just got it from the king. And so it all started. It was a whole mess. And the king offered everyone 10,000 cows just to not become angry with him. But somehow, by Krishna's arrangement, the Brahmins were not satisfied. And as a result of this, he was punished to get the body of a lizard. When he went in front, he came in front of Yamaraj. Yamaraj asked him, "So now you've been so pious, you have so much good karma, but you have also some bad karma. So what do you want? You want to have the good karma first or the bad karma? If you get the good karma first, you will be able to enjoy unlimitedly. And if you get the bad karma, bad karma is bad karma." So then he said, Riga said, no, I want to first get my bad karma, and then I can enjoy unlimited without any worries about bad karma anymore. So then immediately, as a result of this offense, this mistake, he got the body of a big lizard. And he was put, he was living in a well. And he could not get out of the well. But he was a very, because somehow or other he was a celestial being, so he got the lizard, a very beautiful, huge body of a lizard. And Krishna, also Shri Prabhupada especially, he expands on this point very much, explaining that the danger of taking things from a devotee or from a Brahman. Why? Because these things actually Krishna's giving to the Brahman. He's giving the Brahman all this. And becoming envious of a Brahmana for what he has is actually a great offense. Which would definitely make one fall, of taking away things from a Brahman. And why it's so sinful? Because that's actually a different kind of energy. It's actually Krishna's energy. I mean, it's Krishna's special favor that he shows to the Brahmins and to the devotees. So this is very difficult to understand for people normally, who are not devotees. When devotees have some opulence or they build a temple or something like that, it's not material energy, it's actually spiritual energy that manifests. And the devotees are just using this energy, they just become transparent mediums. So Krishna manifests his plan, his mission through them. And to become envious of this, it's very, very dangerous for spiritual life. Anyway, so devotee learns the art of transforming material energy into spiritual energy. That's why we always say, we don't say money. Hey Prabhu, give me the money. But the devotee always says, Prabhu, give me some Lakshmi. Why Lakshmi? Because Lakshmi is the property of Narayan, Krishna. I even heard, I don't know here, but in other places, in South America, I noticed that sometimes when people are very much in touch with the devotees, like the grocery or the milkman or people like that, and they always hear the devotees saying Lakshmi, they also start saying Lakshmi. Maybe it's because people are more social there, so that they associate more intimately with the devotees. But this is a proper understanding. Lakshmi is actually the property or the energy of Krishna. So that's why devotees don't see Lakshmi just as money. They don't see it from the point of sense gratification, but they see it as Krishna's energy. That Krishna has entrusted me this money so I can use it in his service. And the more we give to Krishna, the more Krishna gives. And the less we give to Krishna, the less we have. Just like Krishna entrusts the devotees so much responsibility, too much opulence, money, position, prestige. Now, if the devotees use this very nicely, then actually Krishna entrusts them more and more and more and more. And if the devotee misuses this energy that Krishna gives, then sooner or later a point comes where Krishna closes the vasa home. Fossil? Tap. Yeah, that's it. Closes the tap. And then everything becomes material again. Struggle for existence starts. That's our proper. This is our understanding as devotees. That nirmama, nothing belongs to me. Everything belongs to Krishna. Just like some time ago, I heard a class. Prabhupada was saying that the devotee simply develops the desire to do something nice, something wonderful for Krishna, then Krishna automatically helps him. He gives him facilities, he maintains them. But the more we think of our own sense gratification, the more we become involved or entangled with material energy. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Any questions? Yeah?
It is very difficult for me to understand why is it so sinful? Because I have the feeling that King Rita didn't do it consciously. That he gave the cows, or maybe he did, and that's why I don't understand really the story. There is something I don't really understand. Why is it so sinful to give the property?
It was not so sinful. He was actually very pious. But because he wasn't doing devotional service, and he was doing executing karma kanda activities, he just made a mistake. This is another example that is also given to show that when you carry out karma kanda activities without devotion to Krishna, then it's dangerous. Because actually you don't have the protection of Krishna, but you just, you know, just balancing out your karma. You want to, just like the karma kanda also, those who are very expert in this science of karma kanda, they might commit a sinful activity, but they know exactly how to counteract that activity by something else. Just like in the church, they have something like that also. You go and you confess your sins, and then the priest says, okay, now you do this, you have to pray seven Pater Nuestro, Vater Unser, and fünf Ave Maria, and then you have to put something in the box, and something big, otherwise you are. That's also karma kanda, because there's actually no devotion in them. They just do it because they're fearful, and that's why they also have this image of God, that God is always angry, enojado, is always, he said, zornig, and he's an old, frustrated personality, who's very angry because of all the sins that the people commit, And he has a big book, and somebody comes and he looks in the index, But that's all pretty childish, this kind of philosophy. Pretty childish.
Fear.
Yeah, fear. It was based on fear. Why fear? Because it's so sinful. Just like I remember in Christian tradition, they have this Karfreitag, on Friday. On Friday, they're supposed to not eat meat, only fish. Why fish? Well, at least it's not meat, it's fish. Of course, the best would be to be vegetarian, but it's too big. That's why so many compromises are there in the Bible. Apparently. Anyway, so this King Riga was not sinful, but he just committed a mistake. And the Brahmins were also in the same, mood. They were completely stereotyped. They only saw the rules and regulations and mistake and this and that. And so there was a mistake, so there was no way to... And besides that, there was actually Krishna behind. He was, setting the scene for something more important to happen. And that is that Krishna wanted to teach the world that Brahmins are very particular. Even though the Brahmanas might not be very of the highest category, but still, Brahmanas should always be respected, treated very, very, very highly. It says in the Shastra that even if a Brahmana becomes angry, one should be smiling, and should be very respectful and pleasing. Of course, nowadays it's different. When a Brahmin becomes angry, they say, what's happening to this guy? Why doesn't he become natural? Why doesn't he become like us? After all, we're all one. We're all on the same platform. So Vedic culture didn't teach that. Vedic culture, you have to teach people respect. Everyone would be very respectful. Is this so? Okay, jetzt Nest im Winter. Ah, die wohnen dort. Interesting. So they're always here in the kirtan. And the madness of the Okay, did I answer your question? Srila Prabhupada ki. And I want to thank you all for letting me stay these days, for giving this wretched soul shelter in the middle of winter. Because I'm leaving today again, but I might come next week again for a couple of days. I promised Uddhava that I would be. No, the point is that now I'm going to Abenteuer, then I stay until Sunday or Monday. Mm-hmm. And from there, I would either come here 2 or 3 days, and then go to Mainz. We have a program in Goloka Ishwara's mother's house. What's the name? Nityananda Priya. We have a program there on Friday. And probably I stay also Saturday there. And Sunday we have a program in Wiesbaden. And then I have like 2 days more before I make a jump over the tide, Großen Tide. But I'll be here either next week or after that. Because it's already a custom that whenever I leave, start on a big trip, that I always stay at Uddhava's place. And they normally bring me to the airport. That's already like kind of over the years this has been practiced many times. And they're already waiting for that. So I probably do this. Srila Prabhupada ki. Bye.